Good evening, everyone. This is Mike Quinsey, back again, connecting the light. And I really do not know where the time has gone. It's been a few weeks since Donald made the move. And of course, during that time, I've accumulated quite a lot of material. And I clearly can't do justice to that in even 1 hour. So what I've done is try to pick out the most relevant and interesting bits of news. And as usual, I'll start off with Sheldon Neidel's messages, which I have here from the 31st of January up to date. Normally, I could spend some time on his messages because they usually have a very full content of interesting information. But I will try to get through as much of my older material as possible, which means that I will tend to pick out the most interesting or important points. Now, in the message of January the 31st, Sheldon was talking of the dark, and he said that those now in power see us, that is the Galactic Federation, as a subtle yet fearful threat, and that the past few years have seen intensification in the covert war raging between the dark and its old ways, and the forces of reform. He said this struggle has taken many forms, but it is our intention now to use the decrees of the light to bring this all to an abrupt and successful conclusion. He spoke about the images that have been portrayed of ETs in the past, and he also touched upon what he called the religious foolishness about UFOs, to use his words, that are espoused by so many. And he said they wanted to quell the fear of those who believed it. He doesn't qualify that statement any further, but I think in my own experience he's referring to the suggestions that ETs in general are somehow connected with the work of the devil, and that they are not benevolent or friendly beings. So I'm glad personally that they're doing some things to try and sort that one out, because it is sad that we are in a period of time when we are about to meet our family from space. And yet there will be many who will view the announcements of their coming as something to be feared. So I hope it can be put right. Sheldon goes on to say that the military, industrial and mass media complex grew out of a need by our enlarged military establishment to find a new arena after the end of World War II. And he said the Cold War became a cover for a secret campaign to obtain technologies from alien star nations that would enrich the military's industrial cronies. And also, these illegally acquired technologies were used to forge alliances between governments and companies not originally part of the growing conspiracy. And by the early 1960s, he said, this group was in a position to take over the American government by assassinating a president who strongly opposed them. Now, some interesting statements there. I think it's generally accepted now that John F. Kennedy certainly was assassinated by those who saw him as a threat to their position. It certainly wasn't the work of one sole assassin who you might have thought perhaps had some mental problems that caused him to do it. And I also found it interesting, and I've never thought of this before, that after a major world war, such as World War II was, you would have thought in the normal events, perhaps there would have been a lot of playing down of the armed forces, and perhaps some more serious attempts made to bring peace to the world. But I see now that those that are involved in the military industrial side probably never really wanted to pull out. And certainly for the arms manufacturers, it's continued to be a very lucrative and profitable business. Sheldon went on to say that the cabal, that is, in that time, after the 60s, when they were still responsible to the Anuki, sorry, not the Anuki, the Anunnaki overlords, effected a devious plan to ensure their victory over what would have been the next few decades, and it will reach completion by the late 1990s. But that was suddenly halted by the sudden move of the Anunnaki towards the light in 1995. So since that time, the Dark Cabal has been working very much with their own agendas, and I guess fortunately that is the case, because we now reach a point where they really do not have the full power to continue with their schemes. A little later in Sheldon's message, he talks of the Earth Allies, who can set up the means to topple the Dark Cabal, which he refers to as a powerful regime. Powerful most certainly, because they control all the money sources in this world, and it is one where money has great power. He talks of their personnel that are on Earth positioning themselves in key posts, and he says providing the technology for communications and for moving vital documents from place to place. He talks about the liaison between them and the people on Earth that work with them, and he tells us that when the Dark thwart the attempts of the ETs and their Earth allies, their response is to bring in technology which is far beyond the capabilities of their adversaries, and so of course they can always keep that step ahead. Now that's all I want to take out of that particular message of Sheldon's. So now I come to one issued on February 7th, and this one focused on what he calls our inner neighbours in the inner earth, and he talks of how that idea has inspired numerous myths, legends and fantastic stories, and he talks of how geological science view Mother Earth, which is as a solid spheroid, and they consider that it has a dense middle section, which is called the mantle, and a highly electromagnetic central core. Of course, he confirms that we live on the Earth's exterior crust, and he's telling us that, like all celestial objects, such as planets or stars, the Earth is hollow. And he says this fact is suppressed by those who secretly rule you, because the truth of this has a knock-on effect that can upset other core misperceptions used to manipulate you. There we are. We do have, to my mind, proof of the existence of the inner Earth, and I think it wasn't too many months ago that some photographs came out of NASA which clearly showed the entrances to the inner Earth at the poles. I don't think that's the first time that idea has been put forward, but these were very clear photographs that showed the entrances. And of course, we do know from stories that have been passed on that some of our people on the Earth have actually entered it, and they come out again to be able to tell the tale. Now, he says that the inner Earth consists of two main features. The first, which he mentioned, is Mother Earth's inner crust, which is a continuation of the external surface crust. And he says the two polar regions each have a large entrance or hole something like a cored apple, and the crust wraps itself down and around the mantle into the hollow interior. And he says that the outer and inner crusts have very similar topography. They both comprise oceans, continents, mountain ranges, lakes and rivers. And it is merely that the inner crust faces the Earth's core. And this core glows and is surrounded by a cloudy veil. And the light given off is more diffuse than the light of the sun. So the daylight in the inner Earth is softer and gentler than on our Earth's external surface. So the second main feature of inner Earth is the so-called cavern worlds, and these are immense hollows within the mantle, some of which are natural features created by Mother Earth, while others were made using the advanced technology of inner Earth's major society, the land of Agartha. And he says, this land is the last living remnant of Earth's second galactic federation colony, Lemuria. And he goes on to say that Lemuria, in her original form, was a surface society with a subterranean component, and that the primary capital city was situated on the large island that sank beneath the waves of the Pacific some 25,000 years ago. It gives a lot of other interesting information in that particular message. And you would need to obviously read it if you have a further interest. Right. He was talking in the same message about the effect after the Great Flood, which took place in 8000 BC. And he said that it ended an attempt which was being made to save humanity from the dark ways of the Anunnaki. But despite that setback, Lemuria persisted in her role of protecting the surface world from these havoc-wreaking Rascalians, as he calls them. It was her galactic emissaries that maintained membership for this solar system in the Galactic Confederation. Talking of the inner city, Agartha, he said that it is a world much like ours. Inner Earth contains a thriving ecosystem in which can be found creatures no longer existing on the surface, and that this exotic menagerie is carefully supervised. He says, close to the various cities of Inner Earth are special areas where Agarthans care for and, when necessary, heal the many creatures of this varied ecology. And Agarthans reside in a network of crystal cities spread throughout Inner Earth, and these vary in size from roughly 10,000 to 1 million inhabitants, although most range from around 100 to 200,000 people, and that these cities more closely resemble mini settlements that together form society, and that the underlying unit is the Plet and Podlet sharing a similar life purpose grouped together to form clans. And clans are the primary building blocks of galactic society. He concluded that particular message by saying that the people of this land, the Agarthans, saluted us and looked forward to the day when the two worlds of Mother Earth can once again become one. It's a very interesting article. We don't, to my mind, read too much about the inner Earth these days, and perhaps there is a tendency to overlook the part that the Lemurians will undoubtedly have in our very near future following first contact. And now come to Sheldon's report for February the 14th. I had originally marked this up on the assumption that I might be back on the radio a little earlier, so I'll have to skip a little bit of this. But again, it was a very informative message. It was a follow-on to the last one, where he was still talking about Agartha and saying that there are higher dimensional beings found on Mercury, Venus, Saturn, Jupiter and Neptune, and that these beings do not actually live in these third dimensional realms, but on the seventh or eighth dimensional representation of these worlds. So that hopefully overcomes any objections by our knowledge of these planets as we see them from within our own dimension. And he says that most of these beings are part of a greater galactic council of beings who have relinquished their physical bodies for ethereal ones, and that this special galactic council is part of the various ascended master brotherhoods and sisterhoods found throughout this galaxy, and their role is to guide the physical and conscious essence of the particular world assigned to them by heaven, and it is their prime intent to make themselves fully known to you once first contact is accomplished. And that's the ascended master councils of our solar system are quite numerous and have been working diligently to prepare this solar system for full return to consciousness. So I think that's very reassuring, with so many higher beings behind this whole period and the aim to prepare us for ascension. I can hardly think that we can fail if we have the intention of doing just that. He's talking about the sentient beings of this realm, and he says especially those associated with you are quite plentiful, and all of them share a deep desire to help you in your task of restoring this solar system to its former glories. And that reminds us, of course, that ascension is not simply the Earth, it is the whole solar system that is rising up. He talks about the higher aspects of physicality, and that in the higher levels there exists a more conscious exchange between planets, stars, and galaxies than is found in the realities of this first dimension. He says, in effect, the ethereal beings guiding your other planets are unique. Each council expresses its desire to guide you in the forging of a true star nation for your solar system. This promised cooperation is yet another sign of how truly exceptional your reality is. Moving on a bit, I find there is reference to the Earth's mantle again, and he talks of a period of some 8 million years having passed, and going back over that time to the beginning, we had a cetacean nation, and there were other edicts which included the provision for creating humanity on the distant worlds of Vega. And he said this process led you later to journey to the beautiful world you call Earth. And Mother Earth came to this solar system specifically to fulfill her special destiny, and in so doing enabled us to accomplish our own promised destiny. So we see from that how much thanks we owe Mother Earth. I'm sure we don't forget. And he said that this spiritual connection between Mother Earth and you is no accident. Mother Earth is the most sacred planet in this galaxy. I mean, that makes you think, doesn't it? Wonderful. Wonderful to know we're privileged to be on Mother Earth in those circumstances. He goes on to talk that all that we have suffered is to be recounted by them at the time of their landing, and that they can explain the full magnificence of what lies ahead. Wonderful. Can't wait for it. He talks of worlds having pledged to aid us in forming a new star nation. And he talks of this star nation that has been most unusual from the start. She comprises not only Mother Earth, but also a rare group of humans and their cetacean brethren. And this combination has the potential to manifest the destiny conferred upon by the divine plan. He mentions that their presence here merely allows us to develop in freedom, which is a reality that reflects our true nature. He mentions that as part of first contact, their work will include helping us to get over the many fears ingrained into us since childhood. That first contact is about teaching you how creation operates and preparing you to fully accept your new responsibilities. And he was talking in that particular message and saying that the purpose of it was to help us to comprehend that the realm of inner earth and many higher physical and spiritual realms that surround us are connected to each other and to this realm. Talking of themselves, he said, we exist in the great light given to us by the Creator. It is this same force that drives us to complete first contact and celebrate this great joy with you. So that's as far as I go with that message. Now I come to one given out on February the 21st. I won't take out much from this because it was more in the way of the history of their fleets and talking of the age of some of them, which he said are about 30 to 50,000 years old. Amazing, isn't it? You can't comprehend that. They do talk of them having a consciousness. In other words, I think I'm correct in saying they are of an organic composition. And they have this lovely way of referring to these older craft as grand ladies. I like that. It's wonderful. And then they later call them these grand beings. And apparently when you enter these particular ships, you can actually feel the love that is generated from this particular consciousness. And he goes on to give us quite a lot of information about these various fleets and how they differ from the newer models, which were constructed differently. And obviously, I suppose, as technology advances, could do something extra that the old ones couldn't, although he does mention that they can be effectively altered in their configuration. And he refers to the newer craft as being the larger cigar-shaped pod, which can be many hundreds or even thousands of miles long. And he said, alternatively, you can get a series of huge interconnecting lozenge-shaped units, and that the two designs easily accommodate the primary mission requirements, to Earth that is. In general, the ships with the single hull are used for diplomatic liaison and defence operations, and those with the multi-hull design for a variety of scientific responsibilities. And he said it is the latter that most of the newer scout ships are assigned. He said that these later ones are larger and more complex, so the older motherships have to be fitted with enlarged access portals, modernized landing docks and updated service stations. It's how wonderful to hear about all this information. Of course, he refers to something anybody now perhaps will know if they've read many contact cases about the special lighting that they use, which seems to come from everywhere within the ship and invariably eliminates shadows, which of course we're used to seeing. I guess this strikes you very markedly when you first enter some of these ships. Anyway, if you haven't read that particular report, that was from the 21st of February, it's well worth reading, and I think we can look forward to paying a visit to some of these ships, which some of us will be given the opportunity to do after first contact. And he's talking about food, clothing and furniture which are provided almost instantaneously by an energy processor. Hence, he says, no food preparation and no dirty dishes to wash up. Oh dear, he knows the sort of things that we get tired of doing down here. And he said that even the decor and the furniture can be changed on a whim. And at a moment's notice, your living space can be converted from a workplace to a living come relaxation room or bedroom. And he says, indeed, the possibilities for this residence are as endless as your imagination. I think that's telling us that we can use our power of thought to a much greater degree than we possibly imagine. Anyway, that is a wonderful message, and I haven't really got time to read out too much more. I think I could almost spend the first half an hour reading that out and talking about it. But I come now to the most recent one, which came out on Tuesday this week. And he mentions as a follow-on that they were talking about the inner ring of motherships which surround our world, and that beyond that lies a middle ring of ships, sandwiched between the inner and outer ring, and that this, for the most part, comprises their major communication, control and defence networks, and that the motherships on the whole, the newer models, are drawn from a more diverse pool of candidates. And he says that these fleets are directed from their inner world base on Mars, and that the Galactic Federation headquarters proper is located deep in the core of Mars, and is run along similar lines to the main Agartha base in inner Earth, and that a continuous stream of information links these two facilities. And he says that the most important motherships in the middle of this ring are the many diplomatic and defence ships, and they are there to firstly ensure the successful coordination of any strategy enacted by the First Contact Command, and secondly to oversee the safety of all staff assigned to these official actions. As they've said many times, this is a meticulously planned operation, and can we ever doubt that it won't happen? How could we even consider it? I'm not too worried about the exact date, although humans love dates. They said it will be this year, and I think that satisfies me because I know that it can't be too far away at this particular stage. Having mentioned older and newer motherships, he does go on to say that the newer ones are from 2,000 to 20,000 years old, and that they embody something that we've seen happen with some of the UFOs, and that is they have this shape-shifting technology, which he says is common to most motherships in their science and exploration fleets. He goes on to say that the diplomatic motherships are no more than 10 miles in length and usually have a complement of around 500 scout courier ships each. Now, he goes on to talk more about the defence motherships, but the point I wanted to raise there is that he does say that they could easily take over our world in under half an hour, but this capability will never be used. First contact is above all a spiritual process that is overseen by spiritual advisors. And he says, remember, the basis of this mission is love. So one would hope that for anyone who has their doubts or is slightly fearful of this coming, that perhaps that might dispel them. Having mentioned about the defense scouts, he then says that these can vary from less than 100 feet long to many miles across, and that when you enter the mothership, you get the same feeling of love and care that she gives her crew, which is something I mentioned, of course. And you'll notice, he said, that the hallways are usually wider, and each conference room has a higher ceiling. And personnel quarters are likewise more spacious, with much higher ceilings than are found in the other types of motherships in the fleet. Goes on to talk about the agreements they have with various regional councils related to First Contact, and he talks of pledges which have resulted in their arrival here and the specified timeline needed to complete this vital mission. That specified timeline is not something which they have been prepared to give so far, but I'm assured by the fact that they confirm it does still exist. And then in concluding this particular message, he mentions that it is to prepare us for their arrival, which is fast approaching. And he says, many events on your world are presently coalescing, And these events are a dovetail to changes that, in our opinion, are long overdue. Our Earth allies are assiduously working towards manifesting these much delayed essentials. And he said something that would put some people's questions out of the way, because he's saying, do not confuse our contribution with a rescue mission. And he goes on to say, this divine plan is to set you free, make you abundant, and provide you with a new, more fulfilling reality. Wonderful. No wonder I look forward to those every week. And I'm not alone. I can't imagine how many thousands of people can't wait to read Sheldon's weekly message. Now, in between the time I've been away, we have had a special message come through Matthew. And people who have listened to me before will know that I rate Matthew's messages extremely highly. So, again, because of the time element, I will try and be brief in extracting information from his messages, but they're normally, again, very informative, and you don't really want to miss much. And in response, to some questions that his mother received, he wanted us to know that we cannot know the thunderous goings-on that aren't apparent. This is referring to what is happening on Earth. And he says, everything is being fixed, of course, and this will become more evident and more profoundly than you can imagine. He talks of the dark forces who know that their time is irrevocably up and has ended in failure, and that they couldn't keep Earth and all of her peoples bound in third density negativity as they intended, and they know that any more attempts at massive terrorism to create world chaos will continue to be foiled by ET technology. And our dear friends, the Galactic Federation, have told us many times that they have foiled even more recent attempts to cause another wave of terrorism. Right, Matthew goes on to talk about national leaders who hold on to power by various forms of intimidation. And he says that these are being handled by the universal laws in motion. And he says that your greatest challenge will be the people who will rebel against the truth that will be revealed about the origin and purpose of religions. Religion forms the belief system that extends to all facets of billions of lives, and the initial reaction for the majority of adherents will be total rejection of the revelations, which if accepted would shatter the very foundation of their lives. That's a very good observation. Maybe us who consider ourselves to be a bit more free-thinking will understand what is being said there. I guess most of us have had some sort of religious upbringing, so we do know how it can get hold of your life, shall we say. He goes on to say that those billions whose beliefs are their very being don't know that they are living in the veil devised by dark deceivers, and they will react the same as you would. If they are to make the journey with Earth into the densities, their re-education into the cosmic and universal truth will be essential. And he adds, and painful. He goes on to talk a little bit more about that, but you've got the gist of what he said there. And in talking about people on Earth, he says that they don't understand what is happening to them personally. That is some of them, of course, not all. And that they are puzzled and frightened by the first glimmers of telepathic connections, physical anomalies, severe mood swings, and for some, a new restlessness about life, and maybe even a mystifying sensation that they belong someplace other than Earth. And there he's talking about the effect of the positive energy of the higher frequencies that are coming in and are bringing about these changes. He goes on to say that those souls that are unaware are not dark souls, but rather, due to the reasons he referred to earlier, are the most susceptible to dark influence. They can be among your family, friends, members, co-workers, neighbours, medical care attenders, school teachers, service people. He says the spectrum is global society, and yes, you can help those whose lives you touch by letting your love and compassion flow out to them, but do not let your emotions be negatively affected by the characteristics and behaviour of the lower energies that are operating through them. The darkness desperately wants you to fall into that trap, and they are ever on the lookout for lighted souls who become thus affected. Beings of light are the major targets on the dark agenda, and pulling them out of the light is their greatest triumph. So there we are, light workers, beware. Be on your guard. He goes on to say, please understand that no more now than before are we judging any souls, nor should you. It may be in the last phase of karmic completion that includes mastering the dark inclinations you see. And the next soul level choice is embracing the light, either in this embodiment or graduating into Nirvana. Yes, that's a very good point to raise there. And he goes on to say that the people you know and love may respond to the light emanating from you and from the ever greater intensity beaming to Earth from myriad off-planet sources. But he says that accepting the light is the choice of each individual. You can set the course only of your pathway and not others. An unusual section in Matthew's message that I've never seen before, unless it's in one of his much older ones, but he felt it necessary to give a number of ways in which one could tell if you were in the company of dark souls, and also mention how you could protect yourself. Now, it's really too much for me to read in this program, but I'll give you an idea in case you haven't read it, of the sort of things he's talking about. And he confirms that the eyes are a direct reflection of the soul's frequency. I guess we've experienced that sort of thing, haven't we? When you've looked into someone's eyes and when they are in the light, they seem to light up. And you can almost feel the love coming from them. And yet if it's a dark soul, the eyes are dull, dead and devoid of warmth or light. And that's the sort of things he's talking about, which maybe we've noticed through our experience. And he talks of the tone of voice, the choice of words, or the topics of conversation, and how they normally speak out loudly and they are obsessed with talking about fearful subjects. And he says, when you're listening to someone and can't tell whether that person is speaking from ego or soul, mentally ask your soul and pay attention to your immediate reaction. It is instinct. One way the soul communicates with the consciousness. Always listen to your soul voice, it never lies. There we are. So he mentions also about characteristics and change of behaviour and how the aura, like the eyes, is a dead giveaway. If you're lucky enough to be able to see auras, then you'll see that those in the dark, as you might expect, actually have rather dark and dull colours. And even if you can't see them, there is a feeling, an emanation that comes from the auric energies. So if you feel a shadow or you're turned off from being in the company of someone, maybe you're getting the message. He talks about radiated energy, some other physical reactions that you may experience, how dark energy is parasitic and it drains your energy and uses it to refuel itself. Yes, I remember that. I experienced it once with a lady who used to come to one of my societies that I ran, and she had a very open aura, and people used to comment on how she used to drain them with their energy. He talks about levels of darkness and how the dark forces attack their equal in the strength of light-filled beings. So we must be ready and aware for that. Don't be called off your guard. And he talks about protection, and he says you must be aggressive against the dark forces. And he actually tells you some commands that you can use that will challenge the dark forces, so that if they are not of the light, that they will be forced to go away and disappear. They cannot apparently react in any other way because of these commands. So, there you are. You'll have to go to Matthew's message if you want to know a little bit more about that. He goes on to say that one way we know that everybody can use is this, what he calls the soul intellect test. And that is something you do yourself almost in, well, not quite like a meditation, but it's a procedure to go through where if you follow it, you can sort of put things to the test. Well, that's all I'm going to mention from that particular passage of Matthew's. And what I'll do now is come to the general news, and there's quite a bit of that, obviously. And again, because of the time aspect, I'm just going to pick up on where they've come from and what the gist of the message was. Because what I think it shows is that you could be forgiven for being under the impression that not too much is happening. But when you get to read of all these news items that pass through, and of course I'm talking about what is available on the internet, that's only what I see, there's clearly a lot more than I don't. There is so much happening where people are working towards removing this last cabal. So here we are, 2nd of March, something that appeared in the Huffington Post, and they say that, talking of Bush, no one recovers from a 34% approval rating. And they go on to talk about that. And the person writing the call says that George Bush is the quicksand that is pulling the Republican Party underground, and that if they don't realise that now, they soon will when they do the next poll in their home district. No party can survive trying to pull up a president so universally disliked. And he goes on to say, let alone a vice president that is nearly low at an 18% approval rating. That's exceptionally low, isn't it? It puts it into perspective, because you could get the false impression that they still have a remarkable support. And I suppose that's to the large number of people. But it does show you where they are at the moment, because that is this week's report. Now, the person who I admire, who just recently put out another report, is Dr. Len Horowitz. And he's an expert on these vaccines and things of that nature. And he's written what comes out as a 12-page article. He's on the site called, or at least this came up on the site called educate-yourself.org. But if you put his name into your search window, you'll find Len Horowitz, which is W-I-T-Z at the end. And what he's basically saying is that if avian flu becomes more than a threatened pandemic, it will have done so by political and economic design. He believes that there is much evidence that earlier similar man-made plagues, including SARS, West Nile virus, AIDS and more, are the continuance of genetic studies breeding more mutant flu viruses likely to outbreak. Inside trading scandals involving pandemic, White House and drug industry officials. And he said, talks of the curious immunity of these pharmaceutical entities over the past century to law enforcement and mainstream media scrutiny. And he talks of published official depopulation objectives. He says, with the revelations and assertions, advanced herein, the public is forewarned against this physician-assisted mass murder, best term, iatrogenocide. What a word. But he's saying that this genocidal imposition is expected to serve mainly economic and political depopulation objectives. I don't propose to read any more out of that report. As I said, it was about 12 pages long, and he's a very thorough and well worth a reading expert, I think, in his own field there. What have I got here now? An article that's been run off a website called indiebay.org, and it's talking about the 9/11 attack and saying attack or godsend, and that is apparently the name of a video which covers flights 11, 175, 77, 93, which are all connected with the 9/11 attack. And it features David Ray Griffith, and he says both films are carefully picked apart from the official story of what happened on September 11, 2001 in New York City. And apparently this was seen by the person writing this article at the movies, and of course they had people there who were survivors of 9/11. And he quotes a person called McKinley, who said, "I thought when the report came out," and that's referring to the official 9/11 report, "that everything was going to be all right. But when I heard them, they convinced me there was a cover-up. The commissioners evaded answering important questions." Then goes on to mention that the film brought to the people watching it some chilling concepts. There were two experts in the Dutch film, European politicians Michael Meacher and Andreas von Bülow. And they said, matter-of-factly proposed that 9/11 was actually the new Pearl Harbor, as described by the think tank Project for a New American Century that allowed the Bush administration to enter into war and consequently begin to get a foothold in the Middle East. Now, Michael Meacher, who he mentions there, was a former member of the Prime Minister, Tony Blair, and he said that the 9/11 Commission report answered nothing. And he goes on to say it was a 580-page avoidance. What 9/11 did was provide a trigger to put in place a geopolitical strategy. And that extract ends up by saying one of the more stunning revelations came when Griffith presented information that Secretary of Transportation Norman Mineta testified that Vice President Dick Cheney not only knew about the looming attack on the Pentagon, but that Mineta had heard Cheney confirm what Mineta believed to be a stand-down order, in effect telling his soldiers not to shoot down the incoming jet liner. So there we are. Apparently, former CIA analyst Ray McGovern says, and I quote, "The US is in most danger ever from its own government." And this was printed on the site Prison Planet, and it goes back about a week or so. And during the mid-80s, McGovern was one of the senior analysts conducting early morning briefings of the PDB one-on-one with the Vice President, the Secretaries of State and Defense, the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, and the Assistant to the President for National Security Affairs. And he joined Alex Jones to apparently discuss many topics from martial law to government, false flag terrorism and propagation tactics. You would again have to go to that site really to read the full report. The only other thing that caught my eye was that he said, you know that British officers were arrested in Iraq dressed up in Arab garb, riding around in the car. So this stuff goes on. I've only picked that out because I remember seeing a report on British TV, and they have a little bit of video of these people. But as I recall, that matter never ever came up again. It was obviously taken off. It wasn't something that was meant to be discussed. But it does make you wonder, doesn't it, why they were riding around disguised as Arabs. If you thought the worst, you could believe that they were up to no good. Right, the next bit of general news I have here is what they call the Tom and Stew report. I read this on Michael Worldwide newsletter, and it's Tom and Stew report, that is Tom Hannigan and Stu Webb, and they reckon they had proof of Bush and Cheney indictments that are among those sealed from the Patrick Fitzgerald grand jury. And they said that for a long time we were talking about sealed indictments against the alleged Vice President Cheney and the alleged President Bush fraud. And they were saying that in the last few days, and that was prior to the 12th of February, that news had broken that Scooter Libby's defence team had made an interrogatory, a motion of discovery to get impeachment material they thought would be important to their defence. And in reply to that, that is to Mr. Libby's attorneys, by Patrick Fitzgerald, was the following statement. And they said, we're not obligated at this time to disclose impeachment material to Mr. Libby should he testify in his defence. There we are. The main reason I mention that is because it still shows that there is some move, some legal move, still trundling along somewhere to impeach Bush. Now, isn't time flying by here? With a bit of luck, I'll get the general news items finished, which won't leave me any room for the other messages or my UFO spot, but never mind. Perhaps with the next radio show, I can really catch up on myself. The next extract I have comes from Revcom. And they were talking about the first charge against Bush of committing wars of aggression. And the commission which was held found that the evidence is overwhelming that the Bush administration authorized and is conducting a war of aggression against Iraq in violation of international law, including the Nuremberg Principles, Geneva Conventions of 1949, the United Nations Charter, and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And in so doing, the Bush administration has committed war crimes and crimes against humanity. Now, that's the only reason I included that one. I think it just tells us, again, what is taking place, what is going on. I saw a general email, and what caught my eye in this one, and it was talking about 9/11, about this free DVD, which apparently is a bit like 9/11 Fahrenheit, and I was saying that a recent CNN poll of 10,000 people showed that 89% of Americans believe or know that 9/11 was an inside job. Oh yeah, staggering, isn't it? Makes you wonder, talking of those percentages, if they reflect the general feeling of the American people, why even more hasn't been done to remove this present cabal from their places in government. Apparently you can order this free DVD, and they encourage people to hold a neighbourhood or friend meeting to show it. And you can get your free DVD, which is called Confronting the Evidence, by going onto this particular site. And I'm looking very hard now to find out what site it is. And it is tinyurl. Now I'll read that out because that may interest some of you listening. It's HTTP, couple of dots, two right leaning slashes, T-I-N-Y, tiny, all one word, URL, tinyurl.com/LU382. I hope you got that, because you may be interested in getting one of these free DVDs. Just tiny bits of news. I saw a message going back to the 9th of January now, which was given out by Lady Kajina, channeled message. She doesn't come out too often with them. But what interested me was, it's something we probably expect now, and talking of Nassara, she said that this year, this act will manifest, and it is a real act and law. And she also mentioned that the second coming is happening now. So there you are. So Nassara is
well and healthy, and will come as has been promised. 7th of February, I read that FEMA had evicted thousands from their hotels, where they were temporarily staying, of course, after the Katrina floods. I read that the victims were unable to take up residence in some almost 11,000 trailers that had been parked up, fully equipped, ready to use. And when FEMA asked why they weren't put into use, they said that they'd been stymied by federal regulations. Can you believe it? People made homeless, and they somehow can't find a way of putting them into these trailers. That was in Hope in Arkansas. 10th of February, I read that Bush lied about a foiled terrorist attack on LA in 2002. You can read about that on a well-known site called RENS.com, R-E-N-S-E. There was a CIA chief, Robert Greene, or Grenier, Times Online, and he was sacked apparently because he opposed detaining Al-Qaeda suspects in secret prisons abroad and sending them to other countries for interrogation, or using forms of torture such as waterboarding. Good for him. If enough people said no to these lawless acts, perhaps we would get somewhere even quicker. Brian Bender on the Globe staff said Iran is prepared to launch attacks using long-range missiles, secret commando units and terrorist allies planted around the world if they have to, for retaliation for any strikes on the country's nuclear facilities. And that was given according to US intelligence military specialists. So there you are. Would the dark even dare to set off that type of reaction? One has to think they're so insane that they might just do it. Back on RENS.com again, there was a report about some weird flying entities over the US. That was in, I think, San Diego. I don't know if I'm quoting that correctly there. I see I've made a note a bit further down that it happened in Mexico, and maybe I'm mixing two reports up here. Don't take too much notice of that. But it was about a cigar-shaped object that appeared or materialized before someone's eyes. There were two accounts, one going back to 2004, apparently it's accompanied by a 45-minute video, and one in 2005. You can find that on the CropCircleAnswers.com site. It's to do with flying humanoids. Anyway, time has flown so quickly, I didn't get through all my news items, and I know that I only have literally a couple of minutes left to complete this program. So I'll say thank you for being with me. I hope you'll join me next week when I believe, according to my governor here, Donald Newsom, I think the show will be broadcast live, which hitherto it has been taped. So I have to be on my best behaviour. So let me say to you now, thanks again for being with me. I look forward to being with you again. God bless you all. Thank you.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.